Good morning and welcome to me. Good morning, Sherry.
Good morning, Ashwini.
Unselfish, adjective, willing to put the needs or wishes of others before one's own. It is universally acknowledged that the good, right person is someone who considers others' wishes before their own, who sacrifices what they want, who accommodates another's needs, if necessary, at the expense of their own. The sincere among us earnestly strive to meet this prescribed standard of goodness, despite the suffering it often entails. So when practice reflects our unselfish orientation as egocentric, it's understandable that we feel misunderstood, unappreciated, bewildered, or indignant. But if we read this note from Screwtape carefully, we can understand why unselfishness isn't the spiritual quality it is lauded to be. Note, once again, the admirable work of the philological arm in substituting the negative unselfishness for the enemy's positive charity. Thanks to this, you can, from the very outset, teach a person to surrender benefits, not that others may be happy in having them, but that he may be unselfish in foregoing them. That is a great point gained. Unselfishness, according to Screwtape, usually also contains the element of ego identity. Yes, there is sincerity. Yes, there is a genuine concern for another's well-being. But if we're honest, isn't there also the desire to preserve, within quotes, my identity as the good, right person? Isn't it true that on occasion, attachment to being the good, right person blinds me to what might be truly helpful to the other person? If the philological arm had not implanted in conditioned mind what it means to be unselfish, would sacrificing what I want, need, be necessary to ensure the happiness of another? Here's our first caller. You are now live on the air. Would you please introduce yourself?
Oh, yes. Good morning, Ashwini and Sherry. It's Tracy in Oceanside.
Hey, Tracy.
Hi. This week's assignment really speaks to me. It's one of those perfect assignments. one of those everyone is the perfect assignment. Well-timed, So this idea of charity, which is, I don't know, it's kind of an odd word, and it conjures up references to kind of giving to those less fortunate so one can feel better kind of situations. But anyway, that went to this idea of the feeling of self-sacrifice, that one self-sacrifices what they have or what they want in order basically to feel good about themselves. So it's all feels very egocentric, almost a kind of martyrdom situation. The Screwtape passage really seemed to bring that home. And anyway, I was returned to what my childhood experience was with my mother, and how much really suffering there was around her pattern of never saying what she wanted and expecting that, well, it was always, well, whatever you girls want. But she had very strong preferences, but she never articulated them. And so there was this strange disconnect because we couldn't read her mind. We couldn't guess what she wanted. And so anyway, I was just kind of being with that dynamic and the child self who wanted to please our mother and just could never access what she genuinely what she genuinely wished for.
Yeah. It's the old, if you loved me, you would read my mind.
Exactly.
Right? Yeah. I'm not going to tell you. And so there's always that feeling of being in a contest, right? And not winning. And I could just feel the anxiety as you were describing it, because there's just no way to win, right? However it goes, you can just feel that it's just not right. So in that we can be manipulated, because your mother was being manipulated as much as anybody, right?
Yeah.
We're manipulated into making sure that nothing is ever happy, and nobody is ever actually happy.
Yeah. Mm. There was this passive aggressive dynamic in our family. I mean, it brings tears to my eyes, actually, throughout our lives, she's passed, but throughout her life, where there was that dynamic, just as you said, of you have to guess, basically you have to mind read, you have to guess what it was mm-hmm. she wanted, and then it was a lose-lose. If we kind mm-hmm. of guessed and drew her out, she would get defensive, because her fundamental core belief was to never allow herself to express what she wanted. But mm-hmm. then...
Because it's vulnerable.
Too very vulnerable. Yeah. And then the passive-aggressive, as if we didn't guess what she wanted, to go into kind of a funk and withdraw. So, at this point, I feel a lot of compassion for her and for my sister and myself.
Everybody involved. Because again, in that situation, there just are no winners. And even though we can feel like other people are, like other people have more power than we have, or I'm the only one who is being left out of it. But it's not, when we step back in that way you're describing, it's obvious that everybody is suffering over the same essential process, right?
It so sets up no one coming from their own authentic experience.
Yes, right.
Mm-hmm.
It's too vulnerable, right?
Yeah.
That's what we learned when we were little, right? If you put it out there, then it's not going to be well received. So find another way to get your needs met, right?
Yeah.
And then, of course, we're punished for being controlling or manipulative or deceitful or whatever it is.
Yeah.
Mm.
Yeah.
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 Lots of sympathy.
Really, as you often say, it's helpful to see. And it's really helpful to see in the context of the Enneagram email class, I will say. A lot of vulnerability coming up.
Sense
of, and compassion. And compassion.
Oh, my gosh. So, yes.
Yeah.
All right. Well, thank you.
Thank you so much.
Thanks, Tracy.
Gosho.
Gosh, Sherry, don't suffer, communicate.
Yeah. Yeah.
And how difficult that is.
Yeah. Yes. Which is why in this practice, of course, the reflecting, drawing out, and clarifying has always been such a very big deal. Because truly, if we use those tools, we can manage to get ourselves through any communication. But it's hard.
It really is. Here's our next caller. You're now live on the air. Would you please introduce yourselves?
Yes, this is Brad in Maryland.
Hey, Brad.
Hey. So, what this reminded me of so much is how for someone that isn't a practitioner, they may not necessarily get it, but it is just another way of us seeing kind of how ego operates. And the more we practice, the more we can see how all of these different ways in which we're constantly reinforcing ego, even when it seems like it may be the good thing to do.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And to question, is that actually what's best in this situation?
Uh-huh. Yes. That if I'm tracking what you're saying, Brad, what the assignment allowed you to see is or have clarity about the mechanics of egocentricity. And
yes,
as a practitioner, when we see the mechanics of egocentricity, we can question our conditioned behaviors or orientation or beliefs. But that's not necessarily true if we're not practicing awareness. Was there a specific example that you were looking at?
Not particularly, but what's dropping in for me right now is I feel if there's two things that are described, particularly in Western culture, it is that you should always put yourself in front of others, and that in some way being hard on yourself is a good thing, that that's going to make you a good person. Those are the two things I think particularly are so prevalent in Western society. At least that's my experience.
Mm-hmm. So the beliefs that you're looking at that are similar to the definition of unselfish is simply that it's competitive, right? That you need to be ahead of, maybe not competitive, but simply you need to be ahead of others. You need to put yourself first, actually, and the good, right person is hard on themselves.
Well, no, not that you put yourselves first as much as it is that you're supposed to, the good person thing to do is to forsake yourself for someone else entirely.
Got it.
Kind of the exact opposite of that. On the other side of the duality spectrum.
On the other side of the duality, yeah. But the point you're making is to not examine that perpetuates the conditioning. To examine that allows us to pause and ask the question, and therefore gives us a degree of freedom from just articulating what socialization or from expressing and doing what socialization programs us to do or say.
Yeah, and just look at it from the mechanics of, you know, is this one way or another, not that it's right or wrong, is this kind of upholding some sort of egocentricity here?
Mm-hmm.
And if so, how do I look beyond that? You know?
Yes, exactly. How do I look beyond that? I love that. Once I see it, how do I go beyond it?
Yeah. You know, mm-hmm. Not that you necessarily know in terms of helping someone else what's going to be the right or wrong thing to do in the situation until it presents itself.
Yes. And then to be guided by love.
Yeah, much like how we talk about how, you know, if the mask come down when the airplane's flying and you need to put the mask on, you need to put your own on before you can help anyone else.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah,
as we speak
definitely.
Of it. So.
All right. Thanks,
all right.
Brad.
Well, thank you.
Here's our next caller. You are now live on the air. Would you please introduce yourselves?
This is Deepa.
Hey, Deepa.
Hi, Sherry. So I had a real real life experience. May I
present? Yes,
I
please.
So briefly, the content is a friend who's been out of full-time work for a long time now, and it dropped in that I might ask for his help to, and then offer what felt like I could offer in terms of a compensation. Mm-hmm. And I sat on it because I was present to all of the sensations that it evoked. Oh, this is such a good idea. No. Let's not, you know, just being aware of all the voices. And also familiar with what we speak of in practice, especially the quote, I don't know if it came through in what context, but if you have come here to help me, you're wasting your time, but if your own liberation mm-hmm. is bound up... So, I mean, present to all of that, and then drafted this text message and sent it to him. And he responded immediately, and he called, and we had a conversation, but in not directly. So he started, quote, helping me out with the issue that I wanted help with. And mm-hmm. so I interrupted and said, hey, Joel, just wanted to make sure that, is it okay what I proposed? Is that cool between us? I just wanted to make sure that we... He said, no, you're my friend. There's no way I'm accepting any money from you. And I said, oh, come... Exactly. So, cut to the chase. It's what he said was, you know, you should feel good about yourself because listen to what I'm saying. I'm saying that I can't because you're my friend and I want to do this for you. And I had the language to say, yes, I completely understand and I am disappointed because I wanted to be able to do that for you. And so he said, well, just make me a meal. So so where I am is, you know, what I'm being told is exactly that. Oops, it backfired. mm-hmm. Instead of you helping him, here you are, the recipient of his generosity.
Now you've become a burden to this poor guy. Yeah. And how is that?
I'm in a place where I'm not able to let it go. So there is this sort of a scrambling to, maybe then I'll just, his birthday's coming up, I'll just write him a check for his birthday. And, you know, so all of these sort of compensating, how can I still get away with it? How can I still make it?
Yeah. Well, and it, to me, the really hard part about it is, there's nothing to learn from it.
Oh, how do you mean, Sherry?
Well, it was a generous impulse. Mm. Now, I mean, we could say, well, it was a little interfering on your part, but aren't we always interfering in one another's lives? I mean, isn't that what people do who care about one another? You know, we're either suggesting something, offering advice, you know, telling a story that might be helpful to them, or whatever it is. It's just kind of how we operate. And so to take from it that was a mistake, you shouldn't have done that, that to me would not be the thing to take from it. But just that more, we just never know how something will go. And what a perfect little workshop for you. Mm-hmm. In getting to watch everything that comes up about this. Now, who knows for him? It sounds like he's just completely, oh, yeah, sure, absolutely. You know, it's no deal for him.
Exactly.
He might not be having any workshop at all in this, but you are. Mm-hmm. You are. So perhaps that's the point. You thought it was going to be about him, and it turns out to be all for you. Okay, so we can just say thank you, and there we are.
Okay.
I'm not thinking that the voices are going to want to let it go that easily. Because, you know, this is a big meal for them. You may make a meal for him, but they're having a big meal out of this, right? So they're not going to want you to just go, oh, well, yeah, I get to see a lot about that. Okay, I'm moving on.
Yeah, because it's already latching on to what was just said about interference. And then, you know, then it goes to the other side of the duality, as was just talked about. Oh, just don't meddle in anybody else. Just keep your head down, you know. That's the other
exactly. Yeah. Exactly. And those are exactly the kinds of things we do not want to learn, right? Mm-hmm. Whatever meaning ego makes out of anything is a meaning we are interested in seeing and seeing for what it is, but not taking it on. We've already learned way too much in our lives. We do not need to learn anymore, right? But just to be present to what happens and use it as an opportunity to, it's a mirror. We get to see what's there. Not to feel bad, remember?
Not to feel bad, but just
to see whatever is there.
Thank you. Thank you so much, Sherry.
You are so welcome.
Beautiful.
As always.
Okay. Show.
Go happy.
So happy. Gotcha.
Thanks, Deepa. It reminds me of that old Zen story about the sage or the monk who used to keep rescuing the scorpion and getting bitten. Mm-hmm. And this guy in the bank says, well, why do you keep doing that when you get bitten? And his response was, it's the nature of the scorpion to bite, and it's my nature to want to rescue the scorpion. And to me, it's that beautiful acceptance of the impulse in us to be generous or to be kind or to be caring. Without without the self-hate, we just get to learn to like ourselves for the impulse rather than be focused on what the passage is talking about, which is we're so focused on sacrificing myself for someone else is the way to be unselfish rather than just simply honor the impulse in me and like myself. It's love, right? Yeah. Love is a mode of knowledge. Yeah, love ourselves.
I really like that phrasing, that to like myself for the impulse. Mm. The impulse is great. Did it go the way I hope? Well, no. You know, I really hope one time that scorpion would decide not to bite me, but, you know, no. It's our relationship.
Well, and that there's a line in the passage that's interesting, that you sacrifice yourself in order to ensure the happiness of someone else, which in itself is such a fraught belief.
Yeah.
That we actually can make someone happy.
Yeah. Oh, boy.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yes. That is an excellent one to put at the top of my list of, I'm going to look into that.
Sorry, Sherry, I lost you for a second. Could you say that again?
That's okay. Oh, I just said I'll put that at the top of my list of I'm going to look into that. You know, that kind of belief of really?
Yeah. That's why I love the definition of charity. Sorry, I'm talking because my queue is behaving really weirdly and I'm trying to reboot my computer. So hang on a second.
Oh.
All right, here's our next caller. You're now live on the air. Would you please introduce yourself?
Hi, this is Jacqueline in San Diego.
Hey, Jacqueline.
Yeah, so I'm finding it difficult, or ego is telling me it's difficult to practice charity by being attentive to the intelligence that animates, and I get talked out of doing that.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Well, and I project that the way you get talked out of doing that is by listening to a conversation that's saying it's difficult.
Yes.
Yeah. It's so good to see it that way, right, Jacqueline? That's such a crystal clarity. The only reason I'm not attending to the intelligence that animates is I'm attending to a conversation in conditioned mind that's telling me that it's difficult.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
And so where does that clarity leave you?
It leaves me with maybe I should just do it.
Yes. And I don't know this, but I'm projecting that when that question comes, there's a certain level of blankness. Right?
There is. Yes, there is.
Because there, it's almost as if you're, within quotes, put on the spot, or we could say ego is. So the attention can't go to conditioned mind. If it did, that would be a scramble. Oh, my God, I don't know what should I, kind of stuff. And then when there's that total emptiness, you're actually having the experience of attending to the intelligence that animates, because you're not attending to the conditioned process. It's that easy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, thank you for that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And so
that's it right there.
Yes, that's it right there. And so we only just need to remember that, right? Recall, the reason I'm bored is because I'm listening to the same old in conditioned mind. The reason that I am being selfish is because I'm listening to a voice in conditioned mind.
Hmm.
And so redirect to, what do I love about this moment? What do I love about the flower? What do I love about what I made for breakfast this morning?
Mm-hmm.
They're all concrete expressions of attending to the intelligence that animates, because attending to the intelligence that animates sounds like some abstraction that we don't know how to do.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's it, that I don't know how to do it. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Which is true, right? Ego doesn't know how to do it. As long as I'm identified with ego, we can't be attending to the intelligence.
Yeah. Yeah, thank you.
Thank you. Thank you for laying it out so clearly.
Yeah. Okay.
Thank you.
So yesterday on the email class workshop, I recall that I was very passionate about encouraging people to take a risk. No, and that's a perfect application, what you two just talked about. Just attend to the intelligence and take a risk about what you're going to say, about how you're going to be.
Mm-hmm.
See what happens.
See what happens. Mm.
Makes life exciting.
It does. It really does. All right, here's our next caller. You are now live on the air. Would you please introduce yourself?
Good morning. This is Mark in Ferndale, and I'm happy to be here.
Yeah. Hey, Mark.
Hi. Something that I noticed probably a month ago or more, when Screwtape was talking about the devil being sent from heaven because he didn't believe the magic to it all was disinterested love.
Mm-hmm.
And
yes,
I
that
too,
couldn't be it. That could not be what God is up to. Come on, give me a break. What's he really up to?
Well, I didn't go there, but what I did do was I have never heard those words put together like that before. It was new to me.
Ah, and, the disinterested love?
Yes, yes. Uh-huh. And so for me, it was a koan. I almost, came in on a Tuesday night show to ask the question just to do it, do it. That way, rather than just, asking anybody or whatever. So I just used it as a koan to try to understand what that might mean. Mm-hmm. And the only thing that really kind of dropped in for me was that life is disinterested in an outcome.
Mm.
And so it wasn't that life didn't love everybody and everything, and because we are love, and I know that. It was just that life is not interested in having an outcome for any person, any place, anything. Mm-hmm. And so that's probably the closest that I could get to understanding what that meant. I never would have put the word charity to it.
Aha. Uh-huh. Oh, interesting. I don't know that this is true, Mark. I'm going to look it up very, very soon. But one of my favorite people in the world is a chap named Fenelon, who was Catholic, like 1600s, something like that. And
okay.
I think he was the first person that I encountered using that combination. And I kind of had the same experience that you had when I ran across it for the first time. It's like, huh, how do you, and where I got to with it was unconditional love. That, I love you. I don't care particularly what you do, what you think, what you say, what you believe. That's really immaterial. I'm not interested in that. What I'm interested in is loving you.
Ah. Uh-huh. Okay.
I
like
don't know
that.
If that
no,
to
I
it.
Yeah, it does. It does very much. Mm-hmm. And again, I never. Yeah, again, it, to me, putting the two together, putting disinterested love and charity as synonymous would not never have come across my mind either.
Uh-huh. Uh huh.
So I think that to me, now that, you know, charity is kind of a sort of a catch-all for a lot of things in terms of how I understood it as I've been growing up and living this lifetime. And mm-hmm. and so I could look at a lot of different aspects of what I think charity might be. But I never would have said disinterested love.
Uh-huh. And when you look, though, at unconditional love, does it fit better?
Yes.
Yeah.
It does. Yeah.
Yes. That we, there, yeah, to, in that, if we went to the form of charitable, you know, that we can picture being charitable toward a person or toward a situation, that uh-huh. that same kind of feeling of acceptance and understanding and oneness.
Yes, yes, yes.
Yeah.
You know, it. What I'm amazed at with this practice is how I can hear and see something that I have heard and seen before and see something new in it.
Yes.
Which is
I think the problem there, Mark, is presence.
Yeah.
Don't you?
Yeah.
Yeah. But in so much of our lives, you know, when we were getting this stuff, we were just taking it in, just believing uh-huh. it and going along with it and whatever. And now with practice, we're so much more here. And
yeah.
so when we encounter it with a fresh mind, a fresh perspective.
See presence fresh and eyes. Attention. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, and so that chap, again, I think, you look him up. I think you would enjoy him very much. Fenelon. I can't remember his first name right now, but, you know. F like Frank.
Oh, Fenelon.
Fenelon.
Fenelon. Okay, Fenelon. Okay, F-E-N-E.
Yeah.
Okay, I will do that.
Yeah, I think you'll enjoy him. Thank you, Mark.
Bye-bye.
All right, go happy.
Thanks, Mark. And I guess his first name was Francois. Francois Fenelon.
Francois, of course. Mm-hmm. Of course, like Frank.
Exactly. And, yeah, anyway, that was a great show, Sherry. Thank you so much. And thanks.
Thank you. Thank everybody.
Staying with the technological issues.
Mm-hmm. Pleasure.
Right.
Go happy.
Thank you so much. Go happy.